fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Shalom, shalom. It is Thursday, December the 9th, 2021. It's also the feast day of St. Juan Diego. 490 years ago today, he met Our Lady of Guadalupe. I'm going to tell you about that. It's a big feast day. 888-914-9149 is the number to call to talk to me. Toll free, 1-888-914-9149. You can also email the program if you have show ideas, topics you want discussed, comments, questions, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And you can follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And the show account is at Cale Clark Show. So yeah, I really want to kick this off because we're coming up. We're getting really, really close to the 500th anniversary of the appearance of Our Lady of Guadalupe in what is now Mexico. 490 years ago on this day, December the 9th, 1531, she appeared for the first time to a very humble peasant, St. Juan Diego. And a lot of people think this is not historical. A lot of people think this didn't really happen. Well, I am going to disabuse you of that notion. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing because this is certainly historical. And it really came about at a time, it was so transformative for evangelization in the world because during this time, don't forget, in the 16th century, this is the time of the Protestant Revolution, also known by this phrase, the Protestant Reformation. Some see it as a revolution, some see it as a reformation, but at any rate, it was tearing Europe apart. Europe was being torn apart religiously and politically too, because don't forget, there are a number of high-ranking political leaders, the German princes. Everybody had a stake in the movement that Martin Luther touched off on October the 31st, 1517, when he nailed his 95 theses, not his 95 reses, as I joked around about on Halloween, in a meme that should have went viral but did not. It was his 95 theses touching off the Protestant Revolution, nailed them to the door of the castle church at Wittenberg, and that began this revolution. So Europe is being torn apart at this time. It will never be the same. But at the same time, in the New World, Catholic missionaries were struggling beyond belief to get anybody to buy into the message about Jesus Christ. And then Mary appears on the scene, and everything changes. I mean, the greatest evangelist in history, Our Lady. With apologies to St. Paul, it's definitely Our Lady. Because I've told you the story before, my wife and I, when we were on our honeymoon, we went to Italy, and we went on a day trip to Assisi. And Assisi is so charming, such a beautiful, beautiful town. And we happened to run into, just by pure providence, this American priest. And I've lost touch with this guy, but if you're somehow listening by some divine providential quinky-dink. His name was Padre Cisco. Padre Cisco. And I remember he gave me his email. I've since misplaced it, but that was years ago. And he was giving some people a tour of Assisi. And obviously, being English speakers, we kind of overheard him. And he said, hey, do you guys want to join in? And this guy was like a scholar. He really knew what he was doing. We said, sure, of course. So this priest gave us, along with some other people, this grand tour of Assisi, explained the basilica to us, and it was really, really cool. And we got chatting, and he was talking about when he was doing his PhD studies, and I said, well, what'd you do your doctoral dissertation on? He said, well, I actually did my dissertation on homilies that were preached in what is now Mexico after the appearance of Our Lady of Guadalupe, when 8 million people converted to Catholicism from paganism over about a 10-year span. And I'm like, wow, I want to read this book, you know, this dissertation that you wrote. That's incredible. These guys probably didn't have to preach that well to get converts. They might have been tempted to think that it was their rhetorical skill that was converting everybody. But we all know that it was the appearance of Our Lady and the miraculous tilma that she left behind. So a lot of you guys might have doubts about this. Did it really happen? I know a lot of my non-Catholic friends are kind of, they hear all these tales of Marian apparitions, and they don't necessarily buy into it. But you can call in 888-914-9149. Let me just get started with this a little bit. I want to kind of break this down for you. And there's a guy who he wrote a book about this. He was actually the postulator of the cause of Saint Juan Diego, his canonization cause. His name was Eduardo Chavez. Eduardo Chavez. So he is the guy who really delved into the historicity of this. So he's intimately involved with all the details. He was basically in charge of the canonization cause of Saint Juan Diego. And as we know, on December the 9th, 1531, but as dawn broke on that day, evangelization was not happening in what is now Mexico up to that point. Franciscan missionaries had come in along with many other Spaniards, Spanish conquistadors. And unfortunately, the Franciscan friars, a lot of their work trying to convert the native populace was undermined severely by their Catholic countrymen from Spain. The friars are trying to give a testimony about Jesus Christ, and their fellow Spaniards are giving an anti-testimony. They're basically living in the exact opposite way of the strictures, the demands of the gospel. And it was kind of a contrast, because the Franciscan friars, one of the things they do, there was a lot of paganism at that time. There was a culture of human sacrifice. It was often very bloody. And the Franciscan friars, the 12 original Franciscan friars that came to the New World, they hadn't even been there for a year. And they just decided, you know what, we're going to take it upon ourselves to try to destroy some of these pagan idols, these temples. And if we get martyred for this, so what? We're ready to lay down our lives. So at nighttime, what they would do, they did have a few converts, not too many, but they did have a few. So at night, some of the kids, like that they were kind of teaching Sunday school to and catechizing, and their families, a lot of the young people, they would kind of help them out. So in the middle of the night, they would destruct the pagan temples where these human sacrifices were taking place. And they viewed it as kind of a battle against the idols. And it was like fighting the devil himself. And they did it. They did it. They started dismantling temples from 10 o'clock at night until daybreak. And that was kind of, you know, the first battle against the enemy. But unfortunately, a lot of the Spaniards that came over were very busy abusing the native population. And unfortunately, a lot of the Spaniards were just commandeering people's homes, businesses, taking over their farms, using them as their own personal businesses. They viewed the indigenous peoples of what is now Mexico, they viewed them as less than human. They viewed them as having no rights whatsoever. And they were incredibly abusive. They would take their wives unto themselves, their daughters, whoever they found pretty. They would just take them away from their families, and all kinds of horrific things happened. And Bishop Zumarraga, who was very involved with the story of Our Lady of Guadalupe, he would write letters back home to Spain and just lament the fact that he would try to dissuade his fellow Spaniards from doing these terrible deeds, but they just wouldn't listen to him. They just laugh him off. They would not go to Mass. They wouldn't listen to his homilies. They basically said, we're not going to listen to this guy. We're going to do whatever the heck we want. And it was around this time when Our Lady of Guadalupe appeared to Juan Diego, when really nothing was working. All the work of the missionaries seemed to be for naught, no converts. But on December the 9th, 1531, very early in the morning, Juan Diego was walking towards a Mass. He was going to Mass, and it was actually a Saturday. He was kind of a daily Mass goer, and he wanted to go to Mass. He wanted to go to a catechism class that was taught by Franciscans, and that was from the first monastery that they built in Mexico City. Now, he was a pretty recent convert. He had been baptized only a few years before. He's about 57 years old at the time. So he was young in the faith, but you know, he was a mature man, to be sure. He had a wife named Maria Lucia, and he lived with his uncle, and his uncle's name was Juan Bernardino. Now, his uncle Juan also plays a major role in this story, and if you know the story, you know what I'm talking about, but many of you don't. So anyway, so Juan Diego's on his way to Mass, and that morning he arrives at the foot of the hill that was known as Tepeyac Hill. And he hears this incredible music. He hears beautiful chanting, harmonious. It's like nothing he's ever heard before. He's like, what is this? So he goes to the top of the hill to find out where the music's coming from. And he sees a shiny white cloud. He sees a shiny white cloud and a rainbow. And he was kind of mesmerized by this. And he thought, man, am I dreaming here? What is going on here? I know I'm not on peyote. That's not what's happening here. Where am I? Am I maybe in heaven? And then he goes further up the hill, closer to where this beautiful chanting is coming from. And then he hears a woman's voice, a very sweet and delicate voice, call him by name from the top of the hill. She calls out, Juanito. You know, it's very much a term of endearment. Juanito, Juan Dieguito. And so he says, okay, this voice is calling my name. So he goes up the hill and he finds this beautiful maiden standing there, and she calls for him to motions for him to come closer. And he said, and this is from the account of this experience that's so famous. He said, her dress shone as the sun, as if vibrating, and the stone where she stood, as if it were shooting rays. Her splendor was like precious stones, like a jewel. Everything that is most beautiful, she was. I love that line. Everything that is most beautiful, she was. The ground dazzled with the resplendence of the rainbow and the fog. The mesquites and the cacti and all the other plants that usually grow there looked like emeralds. The foliage looked like turquoises. Their stems and thorns shone like gold. It was really as if he was in heaven itself. It's just this luminescence of the occasion. So he actually fell down, you know, prostrated himself in front of Our Lady. And then she said, in his native language, she said, listen, my son, the youngest, Juanito, where are you headed? Now, it's interesting because she herself appeared as a young maiden, but she's calling him her son. Listen, my son, where are you headed? And he said, well, my lady, my queen, he called her my little girl, I'm going to your little house to follow the things of God, which are given to us, that we are taught by those who are the image of our Lord, our priests. And then she told him who she was. She revealed her identity and told him exactly what she wanted him to do. So she said, know and be certain, my son, the smallest one, that I am the perfect, always virgin, Holy Mary, mother of the true God for whom one lives, creator of people, the owner of the heavens and the earth. I want very much, I desire very much, that my little sacred house be erected here, where I will show him, and by him she means Jesus, her son, where I will show him, I will exalt him, when I manifest him, I will give him to all the people in my personal love, in my compassionate sight, in my help, in my salvation, because I am truly your compassionate mother, yours and those men in this land who are one, and the rest of the various nations of men who cry out to me, who look for me, who trust in me, because there I will hear their cry, their sadness, to remedy and cure all their different sufferings, all their miseries, all their pains. And so to accomplish this, what my compassionate, merciful glance intends, you must go to the Bishop of Mexico's palace, and you will tell him how I sent you, and you will let him know that I wish him to provide a house here for me, to build my temple on the flatland. You will tell him everything, all that you have seen and admired, and what you have heard. So she's basically asking, she wants a church to be built in her name, to exalt Christ, to make him known, to make him loved on this place, on this very land. And so that's what she said to him. And so she sent him as her messenger to the bishop friar, the Franciscan friar, Juan de Zumarraga. And so that's what he did. He said, okay, I'll go for it. And he walked straight into, I don't know if he got to his morning mass or not, but he walked straight to the city of Mexico. And he arrived at the house of the bishop. And he said, hey, I'm here to see the bishop. And he was obviously a very humble, very poor man. All the bishop's attendants basically ignored him and said, okay, you're just going to have to wait here. So he waited for a long, long time. And so he kept waiting because he didn't want to fail in his mission for the lady. And so finally the bishop let him come into to his office, and Juan Diego went in and immediately told him everything that he saw and heard. And of course, the bishop didn't believe a word of it. He said, "Man, this guy is on something. You know, he's got quite an imagination. Plus, he's a recent convert, so he's not that stable, maybe. I don't know." But having, in spite of the fact that he didn't trust him, he had to admit that the message was very clear. It was very consistent. And Juan Diego at least appeared very sincere. So he said, "Okay, well, thanks for coming. Appreciate you sharing this with me, but I got to go. I got to get back to work." So Juan Diego left his house, and he was pretty sad because he realized that the bishop didn't take him seriously, and he didn't get done what Mary had asked him to do. So that was Bishop Juan de Zumarraga, and he himself was a very pious guy. Like he believed in the Lord. He was one of the friars that he personally had destroyed more than 500 pagan temples and 20,000 pagan idol statuettes. So his whole motif was, the bishop's motif was, I've got to destroy all the pagan relics of the culture before I can bring in the Catholic faith. There's no way people are going to believe Catholicism until we get rid of the pagan stuff first. So he was so busy destroying temples that he was maybe not so focused on this message that this indigenous person, Juan Diego, said about, hey, Mary has appeared to me, and she wants this church to be built here. And by the way, that site where Mary wanted it built was the site of a temple of a local goddess named Tonanitzin. So basically, she wanted to replace paganism with the truth. And so Juan Diego was pretty upset by this point. He was pretty downcast. So he goes back to the hill, and he sees Mary again. And he throws himself on the ground and says, "Little patroness, lady, queen, my daughter, the youngest one, my little girl, I have already gone to where you sent me. However, I barely entered the palace of the priest, the governing priest, the bishop. I presented your message to him just as you ordered me. And he heard it perfectly. He received me kindly, but he doesn't understand it. He doesn't believe that it's true." And so Juan Diego realized that the bishop thought he was basically making it all up. He was fantasizing. And so he asked Mary to just kind of move on from him and pick someone else. He said, "I beg you, my lady, my queen, can you send one of the noble persons, somebody who is well known, somebody who's more respected, somebody who's more honored, to take your word to the bishop? Because I'm a countryman," he said. I'm a tail. I'm a wing. I need myself to be led, to be carried. It's not my place to walk in or to go where you have sent me. Please excuse me. Please excuse me. I don't want to upset you. I don't want to fail on this mission." And so Mary listened to him very tenderly, very kindly, but she said, "Nope." She basically said, "You're the guy. You're the guy." She said, "Listen, the smallest of my children, rest assured that my servers are not few." In other words, she could have picked anybody. There's a lot of people that love her, that would serve her, that would do this. "My servers are not few," she said, "my messengers to whom I may entrust my word, but it's necessary that you personally go, that you beg the bishop, that through your intercession, my will is going to be accomplished. And I beg you very much, my son, the youngest, I order you rigorously that again, you will go tomorrow to see the bishop. Make him know, make him hear my wish, my will, to build and make the temple that I'm asking him for. And tell him again how I personally, the always Virgin Holy Mary, I who am the Mother of God, send you." And so Juan Diego, he's still kind of down about what happened before with the bishop, but he said goodbye to the lady from heaven, and he told her, "I'll do it. Okay, I'll do it. The next day, I'm going to go back again. Even though I don't think he's going to believe me, I'll do what you're asking me to do." So he said goodbye, and he went home to rest. So when I think about that, the fact that he was trying to get out of this, he said, "I'm not worthy. Send somebody more eloquent. Send somebody who's more well-known." But Mary says, no, I picked you, not somebody else. Not somebody else. And that's what God does with us too. He picks us for certain tasks that only you can do. God does have a plan for your life. He has something that in mind that really only you can accomplish this mission. You're the person. And whether it's bringing someone else in your circle of orbit, your friends, your family members, your coworkers, whoever you're in contact with, bringing them one step closer to God. You don't quite know maybe what that plan is, but I encourage you to start praying about it, because as, just as Cardinal Newman said, Cardinal Newman knew this very well for his own life, great convert to the faith himself. He said, God has for me some definite service. He's got a plan for me, something very specific for me to do. He's got something for you too. So I want you to keep that in mind when you're asking for the help from above, help from Our Lady of Guadalupe for her intercession. Ask her, what is God's plan for me specifically? Got to take a quick break here. We're going to be right back on the Cale Clark Show. If you want to react to this, 888-914-9149. It is the feast day of St. Juan Diego, such an awesome saint, and really the person who helped bring about God's plan for the evangelization of the new world. Be right back.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Well, thank you, Julie, and it's so good to have you with me. It's the Feast of Juan Diego. It is December the 9th. 490 years ago on this day, Our Lady appeared to St. Juan Diego. And if you want to call in, if you have some questions, comments about this, you can call in 888-914-9149. If you are on hold right now, please stay there. We're going to get to you in just a moment. I just want to finish off really quickly the account of what happened with Juan Diego, with the bishop, with Our Lady, and of course the famous tilma with her miraculous image, which was kind of stamped upon it. But I do want to respond really quickly before I get going to an off-air caller who didn't want to come on live on the radio, but don't be scared, it's okay. But he just wanted to leave this comment, and the comment was, I once heard a Protestant Christian argue that Mary wanted a temple built for her. So how do I respond to that? Okay, sure, that's a fair question. And just before the break, I did talk about how Mary asked for this church to be built on that particular site where she was speaking to Juan Diego, where a pagan goddess was once worshipped, and she wanted to replace that with a temple to the true God. And so it may sound like she wanted it, the church built for her. It's totally not. If you actually listen to the words that she says to Juan Diego, it's to glorify God, because a true devotion to Mary always points us to Jesus Christ. That's why she says in John's Gospel, in John chapter 2, the wedding feast at Cana, do whatever he tells you. He says that to the servants. Of course, the miracle of changing water into wine ensued. Do whatever he tells you. So that's what Mary exists to do, to point us to her son. And this is what she said to Juan Diego. She says, I am the mother of the true God for whom one lives. You know, are we really living for God? That's another question. So, the creator of people, he is the owner of heaven and earth. And she said, I want very much, I desire very much that my little sacred house be erected here where I will show him. And that's, of course, a reference to her son, Jesus. I will show him, I will exalt him when I manifest him. She obviously was very involved with bringing Christ into the world, with making him manifest. She gave the word flesh. She says, I will give him to all the people in my personal love. So the whole message is about exalting Christ and bringing people to Christ. That's what it's all about. And that's what she's all about. So that's what you could say to somebody who asks you that question. Very good question, though. And I do appreciate that one. All right. So just to pick up the account, what had happened there was Juan Diego was trying to get out of the task. He's like, can't you pick someone else, Mary? The bishop isn't listening to me. He thinks I'm nuts. And she said, nope, nope, you're the guy. And I want you to come back here tomorrow. So the following day, which was Sunday, December the 10th in 1531, he went straight to Mass. And after going to Mass, after he went to his catechism class, he went straight back to the bishop's house, where again, he had to wait for a really, really long time. I think the bishop's servants were kind of hoping he'd go away. We'll just wait him out here. He's going to get tired. He's going to get hungry. He's going to leave. But he didn't. He stayed there. And finally, okay, the bishop says, come on in. You can see me. And with tears, Juan Diego told him again what Mary had said to him. He's like, I'm telling you, it's the Mother of God. It's the Virgin Mary. She is asking for a holy house to be built on that place on Tepeyac Hill. And so he says, okay, all right, let me quiz you here. This is the second day in a row you've come here. Let me ask you a series of questions. So he starts, you know, drilling down. What was she like? What she look like? Blah, blah, blah. What'd she say? He says, okay, you need to get a sign for me that I know. Okay, he's starting to come around a little bit. I may be open to this being true. Maybe you're not crazy after all. You've got to get a sign from the lady, and then I will believe it. I need a sign from heaven. Now, he didn't exactly ask for a specific sign, but Juan Diego said, okay, all right, I'll accept that. So when he left, the bishop sent kind of two spies to follow him, and they kind of hung back a little bit, and they just wanted to see where he was going. Okay, what is this guy doing? What is he up to? Where is this story coming from? This story, I'm meeting this lady on the top of a hill. He says it's the Virgin Mary. This is kind of nuts. So they're following him at a distance, and then he crosses over a wooden bridge, passed over a river. So he goes over the bridge, and then he just disappears. Now, did he really disappear? I don't know. Maybe God hid him from their sight, but they couldn't locate him. They're like, where'd he go? Where'd he go? And so they went back and they told the bishop, we lost him. We lost him. And not only that, he is a deceiver. He's a liar and a sorcerer. He must be, because we lost track of him. And so they're saying, don't believe this guy. He's fooling you. This is all a big ruse. And if he comes back, you should punish him severely. Maybe have him beaten up or something. Well, in the meantime, where did Juan Diego actually show up? He went to, once again, Tepeyac Hill. And once again, Mary is waiting for him. So he kneels down before her and he says, okay, this is what happened. He asked me for a sign. He asked all these detailed questions. He's looking for a sign. He says, then he'll believe it. So Mary said, okay. Okay, we'll do it. We'll give him a sign. Of course, I'm paraphrasing here, but we're going to do it. So the next day, this is December the 11th, Juan Diego was planning on going to Tepeyac Hill, meeting Mary, figuring out what the sign is going to be, but he never made it. He never made it because his uncle, remember I told you about Juan Bernardino, his uncle, and he loved this guy like a father. They were really, really close. He got very, very sick, Juan Bernardino. And there's a very grave illness, and Juan Diego looked everywhere for a doctor, but he wasn't able to find one. So his uncle said the next day, which was Tuesday, December the 12th, he said, look, go to the monastery and ask one of the friars, the Franciscan friars, to come, one of the priests to come here. He's got to hear my last confession. He's got to give me viaticum. I'm going to die. Like, I can feel it. I don't have very much time here. So Juan Diego says, okay. So he hurries over to the town. He's trying to find the convent. He's trying to find a priest. And on the way, he's kind of passing by the hill where Mary spoke to him. He's like, oh, maybe I should like go up and see if she's there. He's like, no, I don't have time. I can't do it. My uncle's dying. Got to get a priest. So he kind of peels around the corner on the east side of the hill. And Mary decided to cut him off at the pass. She went down the hill and she ran him down. And so he runs into her and she says, where are you going? What's happening, the smallest of my children? Where are you headed? And he was kind of embarrassed. He's like, I'm really sorry. I didn't come to meet you today. I hope you're happy. With pain, I'm going to have to tell you something here. I didn't come to see you today because my uncle is very, very ill. A terrible disease has taken over his body and he's going to die soon. And now I'm just trying to go and find one of our priests, one of the beloved of our Lord, to hear his confession and prepare him for his death. So if I'm able to do this, then I'll come back and I'll meet with you. So please forgive me. Have some patience with me. I will come quickly when I'm done this task. So Mary just very patiently listened to him. And she understood how anguished he was, how worried he was. He loved his uncle so much, was like a second father to him. And this is when Mary gave Juan Diego some of the most beautiful words of the whole account of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And it's great for us to hear too. She said, listen, put this in your heart, my son, the youngest one, my youngest one. What frightened you, what afflicted you is nothing. Your countenance and your heart should not be upset. Do not fear that disease, nor any other disease, nor any piercing afflictive thing. Am I, who am your mother, not here? Are you not under my shadow and shelter? Am I not the fountain of your joy? Are you not in the hollow of my mantle, where my arms cross? Do you need anything else? Is that incredible? Are you not under my mantle? Are you not where my arms cross? In other words, am I not sort of holding you and giving you a hug under my mantle? Don't worry, I'm here. I'm here. I'm your mother and I'm here. She said, may no other thing afflict you. May no other thing upset you. The illness of your uncle should not disturb you. He will not die from it now. Be sure, in fact, be sure that he is well already. And actually, at that very moment, Juan Bernardino got better. It's like, you know, with the centurion's servant, you know, at that very moment, he was healed. And we find this out later in the story. So this is okay. Juan Diego says, all right, I believe this is going to happen. I totally believe this. So now let's deal with this sign. I don't need to go get a priest for my uncle because he's going to survive. He'll be fine. But what about this sign that the bishop is asking for? So she said, go to the top of the hill where we met before. You're going to find various flowers. I want you to cut them, gather them, put them together, and then bring them to me. So he goes up the hill. He's like, okay, I'm doing this on faith here because it's wintertime. It's really cold. There's nothing up at the top of this hill. I've been there many times. There's just rocks, thistles, cacti, mesquites, thorns. There's actually might even be a little bit of ice. It's so cold up there. But when he gets up at the top, he's shocked because there's a beautiful flower garden of various types of flowers, very fresh. The dew is still on the flowers. They smell incredible. And so he takes his poncho or his tilma, which is made out of this rough kind of vegetation cloth, this cactus cloth, and he cut as many of the flowers that he could and gathered them in his tilma, goes down the hill and brings them to Our Lady. And then she kind of takes the flowers in her hands, rearranges them a little bit, makes them look nice, puts them back in his tilma. And then she says, okay, this is the proof, these flowers. So on my behalf, you're going to tell him when he sees these flowers, you're going to see my desire to get this church built. And he's got to fulfill my wish. And so I'm ordering you that you can only show him this when you're alone in the presence of the bishop. Only extend your tilma, open it up. Don't do it until you're by yourself with him. And so then he's going to do it. And he's going to build the church. So then she says goodbye to him. He's really happy. He knows he's going to be successful now. He knows the bishop is going to listen to him. So he goes very, very careful not to drop any of these roses. And he gets to the bishop's house. And everyone's like, what's in your tilma? And they're trying to like kind of see into it. And he wouldn't let them. And then finally he gets in to see the bishop. And he goes to the bishop and tells what he said, tells what he did. And then he gave the sign. This is the dramatic moment. So he unfurls his tilma and the flowers fall onto the floor. But the bishop is not looking at the flowers. He's not. And Juan Diego's like, what's going on? He's just staring at my tilma. And then he realizes that the image is emblazoned onto his tilma. The beautiful image of the Virgin, Our Lady of Guadalupe, the Lady from Heaven, the Mother of God. And the bishop just broke down. He saw the image and he said, oh, he begged for forgiveness for not listening to Mary, not doing what she wanted, doubting Juan Diego. And he took off the tilma from Juan Diego and immediately put it in his oratory in the chapel to be venerated. And so the bishop said, okay, the next day we're going straight to that hill where this church is going to be built, and we're going to make it happen. We're going to make it happen. What's amazing was that those flowers were Castilian roses that were actually very... This is the incredible touch of Mary and our Lord here, because Bishop Zumarraga, apparently he was kind of a gardener, and he used to love back home in Spain these Castilian roses, and they would only grow in Spain at this certain time of year. And that's what the flowers were. Later on, of course, he sees the flowers. He's just amazed because those are his favorite flowers. They only grew at home in Spain, and it's like in the middle of winter in Mexico. And yet here they are in full bloom. And that was just a kind of a special personal touch from Our Lady. And so Juan Bernardino, he's discovered. He also meets with Our Lady. He says, guess who came to see me while I was sick? Mary had appeared to him as well. And so, wow, they kind of compare notes. And so this is the incredible story of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And immediately, right away, the image on the tilma, all of the people there, all the indigenous peoples who were very hesitant, very resistant to the message of the gospel, the friars could not get through these guys. They are streaming into the bishop's oratory. They want to see the image, and they are blown away. And they're like, we want to know more about this woman. We want to know more about her son. She appears as pregnant in the image, of course, as you know. You've probably all seen it. Very rare for someone not to know this image. And so I'm going to actually share with you, not today, because we won't have time to do this today, but in the future, I'm going to be, in the next couple days, I'm going to be talking to you about what was actually on the tilma, the message, the way that Mary appeared. It was intentional. It's different than how she appeared in other apparitions. It backs up so many of the doctrines of our Catholic faith about Mary. Plus, just the image itself, the fact that it still exists today and it hasn't disintegrated, that is a miracle unto itself. This is an actual artifact, an actual, really a photographic image in a sense, a divine photograph of what Juan Diego saw, who Juan Diego saw that day. It's incredible. So this in itself is, the image itself is incredible evidence for the historicity, because science cannot replicate this. There is no scientific explanation for how this image got on the tilma and the fact that it still exists. It is truly a miracle. And of course, it is at the Basilica of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Mexico City. You can see it if you go there on pilgrimage. So we're going to take a quick break right now. We'll be right back with your phone calls and your reaction to this. 1-888-914-9149's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back. 888-914-9149. This segment is all yours. You can call in if you've been to the Basilica of Our Lady of Guadalupe. If you've seen the tilma, I haven't. I wanted to. I was supposed to lead a pilgrimage group there a couple years ago, but unfortunately, we couldn't get enough people to sign up because at that point there was a lot of violence that was taking place against non-nationals in Mexico, and people were kind of freaked out, and we weren't. Apparently, it's very, very safe there around the Basilica, but at any rate, people were kind of afraid to sign up, so I didn't get to go. I hope to go at some point in the future, but maybe you have. Maybe you've seen it. Love to hear about it. 888-914-9149. I'm going to go to the phones right now. Brian is on the line from Bangor, Maine. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Cale. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome back to the program.
Yeah, thank you. That was a really great story. I really appreciate all that information. I hadn't heard all that about Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Yeah,
but I'd
incredible.
Like to share a personal experience and then
sure.
Maybe a little bit of cultural thought here. Personal experience was a couple years ago, a good friend who's a Catholic priest in the area, we have more for holidays, and so I think it was either Thanksgiving or Easter. I can't remember which mm-hmm. one, but he called me. He's got some physical ailments, and he called me about an hour before dinner, and he said, I'm in the emergency room.
Whoa.
And he goes, my blood pressure is really low and so forth. So I was walking with my daughters and my nephew, and we immediately stopped in the middle of the, we live in a kind of a dead end road. So we mm-hmm. stopped in the middle of the road, held hands, and we said a Hail Mary. I said, let's pray. And within an hour, he was shooting baskets in front of the house.
Wow.
Before dinner.
And, miraculous
and,
recovery.
And that, you know, yeah, it just left such an impression on the youngsters. But
yeah,
the anecdotal stories. I just love how our faith blends with culture. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't, you know, of course, I won't get into the Bills in the Patriots game, but I will.
It's a painful subject.
I had to throw that in, but I will talk about a former Buffalo Bill who happened to throw one of the best Hail Mary passes ever, who went to a Jesuit college, BC, and happened to play for, I think, Toronto, too, Doug Flutie to Gerard Failing. Back in, and I think it was the Orange Bowl, but I just love how that has stood the test of time. That Hail Mary pass, it doesn't matter what faith you are, whatever, where you are in the spiritual life, everyone knows the Hail Mary pass. So it's just, I love how that has just stood the test of time, and it just sends a message to me, to our culture that, you know, she's the go-to.
Yeah, I love that. I love that call, Brian. And don't worry, I love it when people give me the needle. So that's welcome. You give me the needle about the Bills. And yeah, Doug Flutie did play for the Bills, and he could. There was a bit of a quarterback controversy the year he was on the Bill. One of the years he was on the Bills, and the Flutie flakes were all the rage back then, as you might remember, the Rob Johnson or Doug Flutie controversy. It was like a presidential election. Who do you want to be the quarterback? And obviously they went with Johnson. Music City Miracle happened. I don't want to get into that, but yeah, his Hail Mary pass, and actually I just saw it on TV the other day. It's so quintessential. That may be the quintessential Hail Mary pass. And it's this kind of, hey, when all seems lost, turn to Our Lady. And I know that all seemed lost in what is now Mexico in terms of spreading the faith at that point. And look what happened. And the same can happen in our culture. And I also love the story about your kids praying for that priest, and he obviously felt much better afterwards, and your kids were amazed. The prayers of children are really powerful, and St. Jose Maria talked about that all the time. The prayers of children and the sick are really powerful, and priests as well in God's presence. And so, always encourage your kids to pray. And I really do appreciate that call, Brian. That's awesome, and you're right.
Okay.
The Hail Mary is worked right into the lexicon of the culture, as it were.
Yeah. And thank you again for all that information. That was really great.
Oh, you're most welcome, Brian. You call anytime, all right? So that was Brian from the wonderful state of Maine, Bangor, Maine, not too far from where I grew up in Nova Scotia. We're going to go to St. Petersburg, Florida right now, and Robert is on the line. Hello, Robert.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, sir. What's your take on all this?
Well, as I told the screener, I've actually been to Guadalupe, to the shrine there, and saw the apparition, or saw the Toma. I didn't know the word was Toma. And that was some time back. And then I've been to Lourdes as well. And I told him I'm probably unique in that, and that I'm an atheist.
Okay.
So I've not many atheists probably seek out those places to go visit.
Yeah, it's not usually on the atheist itinerary. But what made you want to go there?
Well, I'm open-minded, and I do like to see places that are important to people, particularly religious places. I think it, you know, provides some insight into culture and lets us speak to one another more relevantly and, and kindly when we know what is important to other people.
That's well said. That's really well said. And what were your thoughts about Guadalupe in particular when you were there?
Well, when you go, a lot of people are on their knees outside of the current shrine, which is the more modern shrine. So there's an older one, and then there's the modern one that's quite large. So a lot of people are on their knees, and I'm told that some people travel great distances on their knees, or they walk, but a lot of people, once they reach there, at least get on their knees and do the last portion of it coming in on their knees. So I've been on my knees one time in Poland as an adult, an older adult. I'm 58 now. I was probably 50. And I was on my knees because you sort of had to be on your knees to hide from the congregation as you were going under this one painting there. And that was in Częstochowa. Mm-hmm. And the that's very painful.
And walking on your knees, so, yeah.
I didn't think a lot of it then, but I'll tell you what, I think a lot of it now and think that the people were very devoted to get on their knees, and it's not the same type of feeling as you get when you're a child. It's painful as an adult to do that.
Yeah.
So there was that. And then I loved being in the shrine itself and seeing and hearing the singing and the devotions that were happening in large crowd, and very interesting and inspirational.
Well, hey, listen, Robert, I really appreciate the fact that you called in. And you're an atheist, but you're listening to the show, and you called in, and I appreciate that. I appreciate your openness to talking about this and to investigating what people of faith believe. And we could go on probably for a long time, but feel free to call back anytime, Robert, okay?
Well, that's first time calling. It's my pleasure, and I enjoyed hearing what you had to say about it as well. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks a lot for the call, Robert. Once again, call back anytime. And like I said, in a couple of days, probably do this on Monday, I'm going to talk about the tilma itself. You might find that very interesting as well from a scientific perspective, why it's so miraculous and why science itself can't explain it. And of course, Robert also mentioned his trip to Lourdes. Robert mentioned that he went there too. And clearly there have been a lot of reports of the miraculous emanating from Lourdes as well, which has impressed a lot of, you know, even secular minds that were looking at this saying, hey, something is going on here. I'm not sure necessarily if I buy into what the church says, but it's certainly got my attention. So anyways, Robert, I do appreciate that call. It is awesome to hear from you. And thanks for tuning in to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Producer Lucas, I think you've got something for me from Twitter, right? Somebody had tweeted you.
Yeah, Carl sent this to you on Twitter, which I thought was pretty cool. I'd never heard this before. He said he has a screenshot, and it says, what would you think if I told you that Our Lady of Guadalupe is not really Our Lady of Guadalupe? Instead, she is really Our Lady of Guadalupe. And okay, this is, I think native, I'm pronouncing this right. Yeah, the native term. And it sounds extraordinarily like the Spanish word Guadalupe.
Mm.
Guadalupe means she who crushes the head of the serpent.
Yeah, that is absolutely right. So thank you very much for that tweet. And that is the Bonnie Prince on Twitter. So I never thought I'd talk to the Bonnie Prince, but that he's actually right on about that, because the name Guadalupe actually has two possible meanings. One meaning is she who is without stain. In other words, Immaculate. We just celebrated the Immaculate Conception yesterday. She who is without stain. The other possible meaning of Guadalupe is she who crushes the stone serpent, like he said. That's absolutely true. And in the image that's on the tilma, Mary is standing upon, she's treading upon a dark crescent moon. You might have noticed that and wondered, you know, what is that all about? That was the symbol of the Aztec serpent god that people were, and she's also, you know, In many Marian images, she's pictured actually treading upon a moon and a snake. And this is the demonic is behind this, the devil himself, the human sacrifice that was going on in that part of the world, which was wiped out by the appearance of Our Lady of Guadalupe and the teaching of the Catholic faith, the dignity of human life. And we need that more and more today. So, wow, that's a great tweet. I appreciate that, the Bonnie Prince. And thanks to everybody who was listening today. Man, I wish I had more time, but we're out of time. Patrick took your calls. Lucas Holt produced. We'll see you in the next one. Take it away, Michaela. God bless.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.